You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
The Punt, William Hill's Top Flight Football Podcast.
Yes, hello everybody. Welcome along to the midweek edition of the Punt Podcast from William Hill. We've got EFL Cup football to look forward to. 8 matches to come up this week over the course of Tuesday and Wednesday. My name is Mark Walton. Joining me in the studio to look ahead to said matches is Mr. Dave Kellner. Hi, Dave.
I'm good. I'm very well. I got a winning nap at the weekend on the Premier League Punt Podcast, which has just astonished you and floored you, stopped you right in your tracks there, Mark Walton.
Yeah, I don't know how to react to that. I've never had to react to that before.
It doesn't happen often, I must admit. But it's taken me to the top of the Premier League. I've got to blow my own trumpet on this, at this point in the podcast. Taken me to the top of the Punt Podcast table, and given that has been woeful all season, and there's just there've been minus tallies all season long. Was good, and we had 2 out of 3 winners for the treble, and the treble was a 40-1 shot this week, and unfortunately Tom Kerwin let the treble down. Well, actually not Tom Kerwin, Arsenal Football Club let the treble down, because could only manage a 0-0 draw with Middlesbrough, and given how well they've been playing recently, Arsenal, yeah, it looked like it. Kind of a foregone conclusion, but that's why bookies are rich men, Mark Walton. And I think there were a few results. I spoke to Robbie Savage actually this morning. He said, what a weekend for the bookies, and I think it was, with Manchester City drawing, Spurs drawing, and Arsenal drawing as well. So yeah, I think there were some good results in the Premier League for William Hill this past weekend.
Yeah. So yeah, makes the Premier League a little bit more interesting at the top end. But we've got League Cup football to concentrate on, or the EFL Cup as it's now known, Dave. And some big sides in action as well this week. It should be a good midweek of football. Obviously, team news comes into it with the EFL Cup, but looking forward to it.
I think that's key. I think that is key, and that is the proviso here. If we get to the end of this podcast and people listen back to this on Thursday and I've not put up any winners, I'm going to blame it on team news, basically, because we are recording this on Monday afternoon around about 3:15. So it is tough, because a lot of the top Premier League sides do rest players historically for this competition, but we've got a couple of really intriguing matches over Tuesday and Wednesday that are both televised, and because of the enormity of those fixtures, maybe there will be a temptation for respective managers to put their best sides out, knowing that they don't want to get beat by a couple of their fiercest rivals. So it is one of those situations where team news is so important if you're betting on the AFL Cup. And hopefully we'll be able to point you in the correct direction on this podcast. But do check the team news if you're having a bet. And I think a lot of the cash that we'll see for these matches at William Hill will come in the hour leading up to kickoff.
Yep. Let's get stuck into it then. We're going to start with the televised game on Tuesday evening as Liverpool welcome Tottenham Hotspur to Anfield. Liverpool are 8-11, the draw 14-5, and Tottenham are 4-1. These two sides sit third and fifth in the Premier League respectively. Only a point separates them. Same goal difference, and they're both in pretty good form at the moment, Dave. It's 8 without defeat for Tottenham and 9 without defeat for Liverpool. This has the makings of a classic, but also is very, very difficult to call.
Yeah, and Liverpool are odds on to win the game. I mean, 8-11 Liverpool is short, but short for a reason, I think. I do think they are definitely the most likely winners, and they have been back since this market was formed as well. The draw 14-5, Tottenham 4-1. I say since this market was formed. I checked this market out yesterday after the matches and thought, I wonder what price Liverpool are to beat Spurs, and they weren't this short. They have been well backed into 8-11 now, Liverpool. And it's understandable, because Tottenham are struggling from a personnel perspective at the moment. Mauricio Pochettino has spoken about Spurs' lack of killer instinct in recent matches without Harry Kane in the team. He's still recovering from injury. And Toby Alderweireld has been sidelined. And I mentioned on the podcast at the weekend how big a loss he is. I think he'd played something like 46 straight Premier League matches, Toby Alderweireld. He is, in a different way to Harry Kane, talismanic for the team. He's a leader at the back. And because of his absence, they are stretched. And they haven't been as clinical recently, really. You look at their form, drawn those last two games against Bournemouth and Bayer Leverkusen, both 0-0. Prior to that, had been held 1-1 at the Hawthorns against West Brom. Liverpool have a deeper squad. They've got players that can come in if Jurgen Klopp decides to make changes. And this is a match in which I think he will make changes. You look at the two games they've won in this competition so far this season against Burton and Derby. He has made significant changes. And Divock Origi is a man that I like here to score at any time. He's 6-5 to score at any time, Divock Origi. He scored against both Burton and Derby in Liverpool's previous two matches in the competition this season. And I think Jurgen Klopp's really thought, I want to give Divock Origi game time, but I'm not sure he's quite up to it in the Premier League, given that they play a much better style of football when Roberto Firmino plays as the number nine, because there's that fluidity there with him. Divock Origi is a more traditional number nine centre forward, and 6-5 for him to score is a market that I like, and I do think we'll see Liverpool make some major changes in the lead up to this match.
Yeah, Origi and Sturridge both fall into that similar category, don't they? Whereas, you know, they're out-and-out goal scorers, traditional goal scorers, but the way Liverpool's fluid front three works under Klopp, it doesn't really suit either of them.
No, I think he likes to pressurise the ball, doesn't he, Jurgen Klopp? I'm not saying that anything that no one else knows, but I'm convinced that he thinks that Divock Origi and Daniel Sturridge don't have the it's not so much work rate, it's just their style of football is completely different. Because I know Sturridge has been accused in the past of being slightly lazy and not really pressing the ball as well. But Roberto Firmino is a special footballer, and he has the discipline to do it. I think discipline's the word, really. He has the discipline to follow instruction, whereas Daniel Sturridge is more maverick-like. And I think he maybe has ideas above his station, might be a little bit too harsh, but I think he sees himself as a superstar, Daniel Sturridge, and possibly doesn't work as hard for the team as Roberto Firmino does. In this game, where Roberto Firmino is due a rest, he'll probably get a rest, and Philip Coutinho might not play, Adam Lallana, who's just returning from injury, maybe he'll give Adam Lallana half a game here just to get him fully primed for the weekend's Premier League match. But I think Divock Origi is the man that will start here. And given that Spurs are weakened in that central defensive area with the absence of Toby Alderweireld, I think he'll score in this game, Divock Origi. And I like him as my best bet here at 6-5 to get on the score sheet anytime.
This used to be a fixture with plenty of goals up until last season, really. We had a 0-0, a 1-1, and another 1-1 last year, whereas before that it was 3-2, 3-0, 4-0 kind of games, and it's all calmed down a little bit.
That's all to do with Pochettino and the way he sets his sides up. He's got that definite defensive mindset, Mauricio Pochettino. So, yeah, I think he'll try and keep it tight, because he knows if it's open, Liverpool will take advantage, because they're that sort of side. So he might set up in a similar style to the way Jose Mourinho set up his side when Manchester United went there in the Premier League a couple of Mondays ago.
All right, so Liverpool should win it, but Divock Origi the best bet for Dave there. We move on to Arsenal against Reading next. Arsenal are 2-7 to win this game. The draw 5-1. Reading are 8-1. Obviously, Arsenal going great guns in the Premier League at the moment. Disappointed probably with their draw with Middlesbrough at the weekend. That finished 0-0, but they take on a Championship outfit in Reading who are 8th in the table, but they have been on a little bit of a sticky run, really. Last five games, they've only won once in that spell, lost twice and drawn twice. They were in decent enough form before that, so I just wonder if maybe it's a little bit of a blip for Reading, but either way, it's not going to matter at the Emirates, is it? Arsenal should just outclass them no matter who they put out.
Yeah, I thought they'd outclass Middlesbrough at the weekend, though. Yeah. That was a disappointing result, to draw that game 0-0. And I didn't see the match, but by all accounts, from the reports that I've read, Middlesbrough had plenty of chances in that first half and looked very dangerous on the counter-attack. I don't think the same can be said for Reading. I don't think they have the quality to go to the Emirates and trouble Arsenal. I actually think 2-7 is... I thought they'd be shorter. I did think they'd be shorter in this match. They struggled, Arsenal, with the pace of Traore at the weekend. He was getting at Koscielny, who was one of the quicker centre halves in the country. So he's got some serious speed, Adama Traore. But Reading, go on.
Adama Traore was clocked at, I think it was 37 kilometres an hour in that run.
Is that right?
And if he maintained that speed for 100 metres, he would have broken Usain Bolt's world record.
is that correct?
Apparently so, yeah.
Did you see that?
That's I saw that on great, Twitter, yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah, and he caused Arsenal issues at the weekend. Reading have got a big absentee here. Chris Gunter, their right back, is out. And they've got an academy player coming in at right back. Tenai Watson's going to come in. So I think that Arsenal will try and expose them down the left-hand side. They will make changes, of course. Arsene Wenger will make moves in terms of the starting 11 here. I think Lucas Perez is a good bet to score any time in this match. It is a short price, but Arsenal are 2-7 to win the game. Lucas Perez, 8-13 to score any time, and 13-5 to score two or more times in the match. He scored twice in the 4-0 win against Nottingham Forest in this competition earlier in the season. And one man that, again, I wanted a bigger price than this, but Chuba Akpom is going to probably start this game. He's 17-20 to score any time. Now, I'd have liked something a little bit more tasty, but as you would expect, William Hill, when the compilers have formed their prices, they know that Arsenal are 2-7. The expectation is that Arsenal are going to score 3, 4, or 5 goals in this match, so they can't be outlandish in terms of the pricing there. But Akpom plays left side of that three. If you think it's going to be three in behind Lucas Perez up front, he got 3 goals in 2 under-23 matches for Arsenal recently. Played in that game against Forest as well in the EFL Cup. And given that Chris Gunter's out and they've got Tenai Watson coming in at right back, who's an academy player, you'd think that they are going to be susceptible down the left-hand side, which will open up space for Akpom. So I don't mind Akpom to score at 17-20, and I like Lucas Perez to score anytime 8-13. And you're looking at Lucas Perez to score anytime and Arsenal to win, that's as short as 3-4. Chuba Akpom to score anytime and Arsenal to win is 19-20. But I think Arsenal win this pretty comprehensively.
Yeah, would it be one that would you risk the handicaps? Not always the safest prospect with Arsenal at times, but 8-13 minus a goal here, I think, is pretty tempting.
I think that's fine. You look at the stats as well. Arsenal are unbeaten in their last 27 League Cup games at home against sides from a lower division. They've won 24 of those and drawn 3, which is an incredible record. That's since a 2-1 loss against Walsall back in November 1983.
Wow.
So that record at home against lower league opposition in this competition is phenomenal, really.
It's older than me.
Yes, there you go. And Reading have lost, by the way, just to finish this. And Reading are too short at 8-1. Reading have lost all 13 of their previous meetings with Arsenal in all competitions as well. So Arsenal have won 13 straight against Reading. I think 2-7 is fine. I think 2-7 is an outright betting proposition. If you're looking for something to go into accumulators, is actually a decent 2-7 here.
Okay.
And again, the proviso is if this goes down, it's all about the team news. Arsenal will make changes in this match.
I suppose Arsenal did technically win when they met in the FA Cup last year, but it did take extra time. So Reading might want to claim a 90-minute draw in there.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe. The one what one thing to note here as well is that they played each other in the League Cup back in October 2012, and Arsenal won 7-5.
Oh, I remember that game.
I couldn't remember that game at all. That was back in October 2012. That's the joint highest scoring match in League Cup history, that one. And it's not a match that I have any recollection of whatsoever.
Are we doing betting on over 11.5 goals?
I can't remember that. I can't remember the game. I mean, it was 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
But I can't remember that match at all. I'm just going to have a quick look to see who the goal scorers were on that occasion. When Arsenal won 7-5, that was at Reading. They were 4-0 down in that game. Came back to win 7-5 after extra time. Walcott scored 3 times, one of them coming in extra time. They got that equaliser in the 96th minute to make it 4-4 after 90 minutes. And it's not a match that I can remember. And Marouane Chamakh scored twice in that game.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where I was when I saw this. I think I'd been to Elland Road, and I think Leeds had. I think it was the same round as Leeds beat Southampton that year in the cup. And we got back to the pub that we go to after
that
the game.
That is correct. Leeds versus Southampton was October 2012, so that's it.
Yeah, and we got in the pub and I was like, what on earth is going on here? And we just saw Arsenal had equalised to make it 4-0. And I was like, this is insane.
Unbelievable.
It was quite,
I don't
quite
think
a memory.
I don't think that will happen this time.
No.
I think Arsenal will win comfortably. If I'm looking at a scoreline, I mean, coming into that game against Middlesbrough, Arsenal have beaten Ludogorets 6-0. I reckon they'll get back on the horse here. So yeah. I'll go Arsenal to win. I do like the -1 at 8-13. I think that's standout. Arsenal to win 4-0 at 10-1 will be my pick on the correct score.
Okay. Last of the Premier League teams in action on Tuesday evening are Hull City. They make the trip to Bristol City. Bristol City are 13-10 here. The draw 12-5. Hull are 2-1. Bristol City are doing well in the Championship. They're in the playoff places. They sit sixth in the table at the moment. Hull City have fallen off the face of the earth in the Premier League. They've lost the last four. Haven't really looked like winning any of those games at any point, and they've plummeted down to 18th in the table, Dave. Is this one of those prime chances to bounce back for a Premier League side, or is it a game that they just should, they will not be interested in whatsoever? It's one of those that you've got to kind of weigh up that way.
And it's difficult. I'm not sure, in all honesty. And I'm not sure about these prices either, because you're attracted to a Premier League side away at a Championship club at 2-1 or bigger, and they are 2-1 here, Hull City. But how can you back them? They've conceded 15 goals in those four Premier League games. Ever since they gave Phelan the job, it's been swiftly downhill, hasn't it, for Hull City? And this was always going to happen. And this isn't after timing here, because we said on the pre-season Premier League podcast that if you don't invest, if you come up from the Championship and don't invest in Premier League players, you will end up going down.
Yep.
And Hull will finish bottom of the Premier League this season. They're currently in 18th place, 5 points above Sunderland, who are rock bottom at the moment, but they've just been abysmal recently, and they haven't got the quality in the side. Bristol City will fancy this. They will fancy their chances of knocking out a Premier League team, and given their respective positions in the two leagues, there's probably not, in terms of quality, much between these two sides. Hull City haven't got any players of real note. Robert Snodgrass was the man that was saving them early on in the season, and he's probably their only real Premier League player in that team.
Yeah, and do you think they'll try and wrap him in cotton wool for a game like this and not bother with him?
Well, they
need him more in the Premier League than they do.
They do. I mean, they went to Stoke City and won 2-1 in there when they were not on a roll, but when they'd started the season strongly in the League Cup. Hull City went to the Britannia and got a result. And he actually played a very weak side in that match against Stoke. Mbakani and Keane played up front. Henriksen and Mason were in the centre of midfield. Didn't go with his recognised centre-back partnership either. I've no idea about the 90-minute prices here. There's one bet that I like in this, and I think you're going to mention him, Tammy Abraham.
Yeah.
You were going to mention him anyway. I saw that up on your screen there.
Yeah, that was my follow-up question, if you didn't mention him. He's obviously on loan from Chelsea, and he's going great guns. 8 goals, I think it is, for Bristol City already. And great bit of business from Bristol City as well. They sold Jonathan Codger for big money. Their star striker had gone, scored plenty of goals for them last season. Bring Tammy Abraham in on loan, and he's had an immediate impact. And they've carried on their progress from last season. They're going great guns, aren't they, Bristol City? So I would agree with you, Dave. Yeah, I'll be looking at him as a goal scorer option in this game.
I wanted a bigger price. I know I'm greedy like this, but he's 11-10 to score any time in the match. And that's based around the fact that Bristol City are favourites to win this football match on Tuesday night as well. But yeah, like you said, he's been superb this season. 8 goals in 14 Championship matches, and scored 3 goals in the EFL Cup this season as well, in the two matches that Bristol City have played. So I can see him scoring any time at 11-10. And he'll want to score against a Premier League club here, because he is on loan from Chelsea, and Antonio Conte has given some of the younger players a chance this season in that starting 11. Nathaniel Chalabar might play in the EFL Cup this midweek. We'll come on to Chelsea in a little bit. And Ruben Loftus-Cheek has also seen starting time in this competition. So I think that Abraham, who has been playing well for England's under-21 side as well, will see this as a real opportunity to make an impression against a Premier League side, score a goal here, and maybe get recalled from his loan spell at Bristol City and get game time for Chelsea in the maybe second half of the season. So, yeah, Tammy Abraham would be my bet here at 11-10 to score any time. I wouldn't back Bristol City at the prices. I wouldn't back Hull City at the prices. If I had to, gun to head, make a play in the 90-minute market, it would be the draw at 12-5. But this is a desperate situation for Hull City. They've got to start getting points in the Premier League. This EFL Cup is an unwelcome distraction for Hull, whereas Bristol City will see it as an opportunity, which is a big factor in these games.
Yeah. It's just the price thing, isn't it? Like, I agree with what you're saying entirely. 11-10, I was thinking maybe put that with a Bristol City win, take a chance that that's going to happen, but 21-10, it's just not big enough.
No, it's not. The market is framed perfectly because it's enticing bettors to take a chance on Hull, who should be the better of the two sides at 2-1, and it's not giving enough value in Bristol City for those that just want to back more doom and gloom, or back Bristol City in the assumption there's going to be more doom and gloom for Hull City in the game. So yeah, I think it's framed absolutely perfect, the outright market.
Let's move on. Leeds against Norwich up next. Leeds are priced up at 7-4. The draw 11-5. Norwich City are 13-8. Leeds sitting 10th in the Championship table at the moment. 1-0 win away at Wolves at the weekend. Norwich had been going great guns. They lost to Newcastle a few weeks ago, which is obviously not a bad result considering how well Newcastle are going. But they did lose to Preston at the weekend, which is a result I didn't necessarily see coming. So where do you stand on this one, Dave?
It's a surprise, that result, wasn't it? And you say that, I mean, they will have been upset with the way that Newcastle game materialised, weren't they, given they were 3-2 up going into the final minute there. And Newcastle scored two goals in added on time to win that match 4-3, and that turned Newcastle's season around to a certain extent as well. I'm not sure. You're the Leeds United expert in this studio, so I was going to ask you. There seems to be a little bit of optimism around Elland Road at the moment. You're going to this game as well.
I'm going to this game, yes. I tend to find myself now looking, if I can't listen to it, I'll watch it, looking on Twitter and seeing positive comments. And the fact that we're winning it, I don't know how to feel about it. I'm not used to this. There's almost a slight sense of optimism growing inside me. I'm not sure. I feel like I can't trust it.
I can see Leeds maybe winning this match. I've just got no idea about the outright prices again, really. Leeds have only progressed from one of their last six League Cup fourth round ties. It was last time, though, they reached this stage of the competition. That was back in that game that you mentioned earlier against Southampton in October 2012. I think Norwich City are a much better side. If you just had to say which of these two sides are better, I think Norwich are probably the second best side in the Championship, really, behind Newcastle United. But then you've got to factor in a home field advantage for Leeds. Will they have a big crowd there? How many do you think they'll get in at Elland Road?
You're going to NFL on me again. Home field advantage.
Home field advantage, yeah.
they're not opening all of the stands, but from what I've seen, they have almost sold out all of their original ticket allocation. The stands they were going to open, they've almost sold them out. So I think there'll be a good crowd there. I'd say between 15,000 and 20,000, I'd imagine.
Do you think they'll win?
Yes.
Okay. You're going for a Leeds win.
Because the home form at the moment is the best that it's been at Elland Road for a number of years. It used to be, particularly back end of last season, where Leeds couldn't buy a win at home. That was a real problem. Whereas they look very solid at home at the moment. They're not conceding many goals. Pontus Janssen and Bartley at the back have formed a real good partnership. I think with a big crowd behind them, I think Leeds could have a go at this, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping so anyway.
Well, I'd yield to your superior knowledge of these two sides.
But I'm very biased in this.
Yeah, you are very biased in this instance. But I could see Leeds winning. 7-4 Leeds to win the game. They've scored a few late goals in this competition so far. Three of their four goals in the EFL Cup this season have come in the 85th minute or later. So that's something to maybe bear in mind as well here. I don't know. I think it could be a draw this game. I think they quite, given that Leeds have the advantage at Elland Road with this being a home tie, and Norwich are the better side, I see it being very evenly matched. And that's how William Hill see it as well, to a certain extent, with these two basically the same price. 7-4 Leeds, Norwich 13-8. I'll take the biggest of the three prices and go for the draw at 11-5.
Yeah, three of the last five meetings have been draws as well between the two sides. So, yeah, I'd say that's probably the safest option, if I'm honest. Let's move on.
Yep.
Newcastle against Preston then to finish off with. Newcastle are 8-15, the draw 11-4. Preston are 6-1. Newcastle in real good form at the moment. Seven without defeat. They've won six of those seven. They've gone to the top of the Championship. But they take on Preston, who, whilst I just mentioned their result against Norwich has been a little bit of a surprise, they are seven unbeaten. And they're quietly going about their business, up into ninth in the Championship now. So, will this be closer than the odds suggest?
I think that the problem we've got here is if Preston decide, it's how seriously they decide to take this fixture, because Newcastle will make changes. I was speaking to Craig Forsyth, who's a season ticket holder at Newcastle and who works on our racing radio programme and on William Hill TV as well.
Yeah.
And he has a good deal of understanding about how Rafa Benitez is going to structure his team on Tuesday night, and he was saying that he expects Matt Ritchie, Dwight Gayle, Johan Gufran, Ayosi Perez all to be rested, and Jonjo Shelvey probably to be rested as well. He thinks Christian Atsu is going to be in the team, as maybe when they play three in behind Mitrovic, Alexander Mitrovic is the man he expects to start up front. Christian Atsu interests me at 3-1 to score any time in this match, given that Newcastle are 8-15. We've talked about scorers a great deal on this podcast. This one at 3-1, when a side is 8-15, and he's expected to be a focal point for a team that are flying at the moment. Newcastle, that result against Norwich was so big, turning that game on its head in the last minute and winning that match 4-3. And Dwight Gayle's form is astonishing this season. He won't play in this game, though. I'm almost sure that him and Ayosi Perez will be rested. Matt Rich is the one that I'm uncertain about. He played in that League Cup win in the last round, and he scored at the weekend in the 3-0 win against Ipswich as well. So if Matt Ritchie was to start in this game, 19-10 could look attractive for him. But Newcastle United are the best side in the Championship by a distance, and they'll beat Preston North End. 8-15, not giving anything away, but I like Christian Atsu to score any time in the match, and it's 3-1.
Okay. I was wondering if this was going to be a game where you could just take the result out of it and go overs on the goals, because Newcastle have got goals about them.
Yeah.
But so have Preston at the moment as well. Preston, over 2.5 goals landed in their penultimate fixture, the time before that as well, and 5 games ago. So in 3 of the last 5 outings, over 2.5 goals has landed. In fact, over 3.5 goals has landed in all of them as well. So maybe we could see a few goals here.
Yeah, I think so. I think the way Newcastle play, I'd expect goals in the game. I mean, I'd say that Newcastle to win and over 2.5 goals would be a worthwhile betting option here. 6-5 it is when you talk about a team that are 8-15 to win the game.
Yeah.
I think that's a fine price, actually.
All right, that's Tuesday night's games then. Let's move on to Wednesday evening's action, and we'll start with the live game there. It's the small matter of a Manchester derby, Manchester United against Man City at Old Trafford. It's 13-8 for United. The draw is 23-10, and City are 9-5. At the best of times, this is a game that neither club would want to lose. But particularly here, Dave, because Manchester City are 5 without a win. I think it's only the second time in Pep Guardiola's management career that he's gone 5 games without a win.
Yeah.
Manchester United obviously thrashed by Chelsea at the weekend. Jose Mourinho very unhappy with the result, unhappy with Antonio Conte, unhappy with everyone. This is massive for both clubs, isn't it? Even though it's only an EFL Cup game.
It means more than it usually would, definitely. I don't know if it's massive for both clubs because they see this as I think both probably see it as an inferior trophy. But you're right in terms of momentum, if they're going to build any. I think the whole Jose Mourinho, Antonio Conte saga has been blown out of proportion. I think Mourinho knows what he's doing in these situations, and suddenly At the end of that game, everyone's talking about Mourinho being upset with Antonio Conte rather than the deficiencies of his team. It's a deflection from Jose Mourinho.
Do you think he sat there and he thought, OK, we're getting beat 4-0, what do I do? What do I do?
But possibly.
I'll start a fight with Conte.
I think possibly that's the way his mind works, because he's ended up fielding questions about his dispute with Antonio Conte at the end of the match rather than about how his team were ripped apart. And that 4-0 defeat was embarrassing. I watched the full match and I'm not sure. Daley Blind's got caught off position for the opening goal, but to concede after 30 seconds, Mourinho did say the whole game plan goes out of the window at that point. Chris Smalling, I don't know what he's doing in that situation, because he runs alongside the ball when he could just clear it. It was weird.
I don't think he sees the danger there, that's why.
So you think he doesn't know Pedro's on his shoulder?
No, I think he thinks he's got a bit of time to run alongside the ball and then take possession and build from the back. I don't think he's got any idea that Pedro's hunting him down.
That's probably miscommunication there between David De Gea, Chris Smalling and Daley Blind to a certain extent.
I think there is a real lack of communication at the back for Manchester United.
Yeah, I do. And it's weird, isn't it? We're thinking about England. We have been thinking about England's future in the international break, and you've got Chris Smalling playing for Manchester United and John Stones playing for Manchester City, and both made calamitous errors at the weekend.
Yeah, we're never winning anything ever again, England.
Yeah, well, that could be the case. What's going to happen in this one, Mark Walton?
I think City win.
Yeah, I do as well, actually. I think City at 9-5 is probably the play here. I mean, in their last six trips to Old Trafford, Manchester City have won 4, drawn 1 and lost 1. So that's a good record on its own. And I think there are more problems or deeper-seated problems at Manchester United than there are at Manchester City. Paul Pogba has been incredibly poor this season so far. I know I don't want to sound like I'm scapegoating here and using Paul Pogba as an example, but he is still meant to be one of the best players in the world, Paul Pogba, and was signed for £100 million. And I'm not sure what he's bringing to the team at the moment. The odd moment of genius, I suppose, when he plays a ball through that only a handful of players in the world can produce. Apart from that, the way he let N'Golo Kante run past him at the weekend, and De Herrera perhaps to blame as well for that fourth goal in the game. But I've been tremendously disappointed with the way Paul Pogba's performed. And I don't expect to see Zlatan Ibrahimovic in the starting lineup here as well. He's not held the ball up as efficiently as I expected in the last month or so. I can see changes being made here, whether or not Marcus Rashford is rested as well. Anthony Martial is the man that I think will probably have a leading role to play in this match. One other thing from that match at the weekend against Chelsea, I don't understand why Ashley Young didn't play in the game. Having played so well against Liverpool, and with Mourinho you'd think looking to adopt a similar style, named an unchanged starting lineup apart from bringing Jesse Lingard in for Ashley Young, and then asked Ashley Young and Marcus Rashford both to play virtually when they form that six at the back, virtually as wing backs in that match. Ashley Young is much more capable in that department than Lingard, so that was a real surprise for me.
I think it's probably down to Lingard's performance on Thursday night. He played very well, didn't he? So did Pogba against Fenerbahce. So yeah. He's maybe feeling that if Lingard can add that extra element of attack that possibly Ashley Young doesn't have anymore. That's
at home against Fenerbahce, though, isn't it?
When they're
1-6 to win the football match.
Yeah.
Whereas against Liverpool, they were outsiders of the three markets there, the win-draw-win market. So I was surprised to see an absence of Ashley Young there. Manchester City, I think their problems are slightly more cosmetic. I don't think there's anything seriously wrong. I thought they were decent in the first half against Barcelona, despite being beaten 4-0 in that match.
That was just a funny old game, wasn't it? They didn't deserve to lose 4-0 in that game.
No, they made individual errors, and that's the problem with Manchester City at the moment. And it's okay saying you don't deserve to lose 4-0, but these games against big clubs come down to moments, and the clinicalness of Barcelona, if you make individual errors, you're going to get beaten. And in the end, they got beaten 4-0. Again, John Stones made an individual error in that match against Southampton, and Claudio Bravo was caught on his heels. Vincent Kompany made a move forward when he should have been dropping off. So a culmination of factors contributed to that Nathan Redmond goal.
Yep.
One man that maybe has, and you've got him up again, enhanced his reputation while others have been damaged in the last 6 weeks for Manchester City,
yeah,
is Kelechi Iheanacho.
Yep.
He's actually got an incredible record in the Premier League. He's had 17 shots on target in his Premier League career, and he's scored 11 times, which, when you talk about a guy, that's what you want, isn't it? Someone that's formidable in front of goal, and he is Kelechi Iheanacho. He actually started in City's EFL Cup win against Swansea. I think he can score in this game. I think he'll start. There is something going on between Sergio Aguero and Pep Guardiola. Guardiola's comments about Sergio Aguero were weird. He said about 7 or 8 days ago, Sergio Aguero can leave Manchester City whenever he likes, which I thought was, I don't know if the quote was taken out of context, but there seems to be just a little bit of animosity between Aguero and Guardiola now. And Aguero didn't start in the game in the Camp Nou against Barcelona, and that was a tactical decision made by Pep Guardiola. That won't have sit well with a player like Aguero, who is the best striker in the Premier League. So I wonder whether Iheanacho plays in this match. I think 15-8 for him to score any time is a good price.
Yeah, I like the price on Iheanacho. I think he will start as well, like you say. The Aguero stuff, is that Pep trying to stamp his idea that, you know, there's nobody bigger than the club kind of thing when he's first coming in there? Because if anybody was going to be able to hold Man City to ransom, it would have been Sergio Aguero, wouldn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's what he's
not
doing.
Saying that's
laying
what kind
down
of
the marker, perhaps.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It was interesting to read that Pep Guardiola had kept his team in the changing room an hour after the match on Sunday against Southampton, maybe reading them the riot act. So expect a response. I think Manchester United's problems are much greater than Manchester City's. Manchester City have gone to Old Trafford and won already this season. They've got better players. If there are wholesale changes to these two teams, I think City's quality is much better than Manchester United's in terms of squad strength.
Mm. Yeah.
So Manchester City to win this game at 9-5.
I'm going to ask you the customary Wayne Rooney question as well. Does he play, do you think? I know he picked up a bit of a knock before the weekend.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think if he's fit, he plays in this match. But he didn't feature in the squad for the trip to Stamford Bridge on Sunday. And there's a possibility he is still injured. But Manchester City have a good recent record at Old Trafford, and I think they'll enhance it on Wednesday night.
Okay. Let's move on then to Southampton against Sunderland. Southampton are in the betting here at 2-5. The draw 7-2. Sunderland are 7-1. Southampton are 8th in the table. They drew with City at the weekend, of course, playing pretty well at the moment. Sunderland, rock bottom of the Premier League, yet to win a game in the league. It's going to be a distraction that Sunderland don't want, surely, David?
You'd think so. I mean, Sunderland, what can you say about Sunderland? 2 points from 9 games in the league this season. Keep on giving away points in the last minute of Premier League matches, which is never good. And at Southampton, have this rotation of players each and every season, and managers, and Claude Puel's in there now, and they still keep producing. Southampton, they're an amazing football club, they really are. And I thought they were fantastic at the Etihad on Sunday. Played really well. I know that almost the narrative is City aren't performing at the moment. Why are City doing this? Why aren't City doing that? Etc. 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 But Southampton, you've got to look at that performance and give them due credit. I thought they were sensational. That back four's fantastic. Virgil van Dijk gets better every single time I see him play. They've got Oriol Romeu, who sits in front of the back four and looks superb. And the only hesitation I've got with backing Southampton at 2-5 is that they are going to look to rotate in this match, and Claude Puel will maybe give his fringe players a little bit of a chance. But Sunderland played a much weakened side in their winning the last round in the competition away at Queen's Park Rangers. If they play the side they played in that match against QPR, they will be beaten by Southampton and beaten badly. Charlie Austin actually played in the last League Cup match, but since then he's become a regular in the starting 11 in the Premier League. So whether or not they'll allow Shane Long an opportunity here, he's 21-20 to score any time. And I'm still waiting for Jay Rodriguez to return. His career has been curtailed through injury in the last 2 years. I'm convinced he's a special talent when he gets a run of fixtures under his belt. It's just whether or not it's ever going to happen. It's something that recurs with Jay Rodriguez. He's in the goal scorer markets, but I'm not sure he'll play in this match. Nathan Redmond as well, I think he'll be rested. So you've got to look at some of the fringe players if you're having a bet on the goal scorer markets for Southampton. But if either Charlie Austin or Shane Long play, I think they'll score in this game. It's even money, Charlie Austin. Shane Long, 21-20. And how can you bet Sunderland to score in this match? That Southampton defence is so strong. I think Southampton will win to nil, and it's 17-20 for Southampton to win the game to nil. You've got a bigger price there than me.
I've got 23-20.
Sorry, I'm looking at the keep a clean sheet market. I'll take the Southampton to win to nil market. 23-20.
Yeah.
Good price. Good price.
We're thinking along the same lines, which is worrying, Dave, because I was going to go there next, because Southampton's home form is just superb. Mm. They have, in this calendar year, they lost an FA Cup game on the 9th of January at home to Crystal Palace. Since then, their only defeat was against Chelsea in the Premier League. That's some record.
Yeah.
And recently, they don't concede many goals either. 3-0 against Sparta Prague, 1-0 against Swansea, 2-0 against Crystal Palace, 3-1 against Burnley, but I think Burnley possess more of an attacking threat than Sunderland do. I think, 90 of the clubs in the football ladder possess more.
Yeah, and Jermaine Defoe, who's the man that scores if Sunderland do score, he didn't play in the last EFL Cup match.
No.
So if he doesn't start in this game, where do Sunderland's goals come from? I can't see them scoring. I think Southampton to win to nil is a great price at 23-20.
Yeah, I like it. Let's move on to West Ham against Chelsea then to finish off with. West Ham are 7-2. The draw is 5-2. Chelsea are 4-5. West Ham have turned the corner a little bit, Dave. They were obviously struggling. There was all the pressure of moving to London Stadium and not getting the results. Since then, they've won against Palace away from home. They won at home against Sunderland, which obviously isn't the biggest result to write home about, but it is a home win in the Premier League at the London Stadium. Chelsea's going to be a far more difficult task, though, and they'll arrive here with their tails up. But are you expecting a lot of changes for Chelsea here?
I think there'll be some changes, yeah. But the thing with Chelsea is Antonio Conte now, he's got his formation sorted. A lot has been written in the weekend papers about this, or Monday morning papers even, that now he's got that three at the back sorted. He can play that three at the back. Mm. John Terry's going to be back for this game. He's expected to actually start in this game. So they've got John Terry, Cesar Azpilicueta, David Luiz and Gary Cahill. So three of four there to play in that that back three. And then they've got Marcus Alonso and Victor Moses, who has been or was marginalised under Jose Mourinho. I think he was the happiest chap on the field after he got one over on Mourinho, and he was the one that tweeted the team photo of them all at the end of that match in the dressing room. So he's got his system now, and he's a systems man, Antonio Conte. So he'll be delighted that they've kept, is it three consecutive clean sheets they've kept now? Beat Hull City prior to that that win against Leicester City, and then of course got four against Manchester United at the weekend. And that three at the back allows Marcus Alonso and Victor Moses to do the donkey work, tracking both back and creating attacks going forward. And he can sit Nemanja Matic and N'Golo Kante and allow Eden Hazard and Pedro and Diego Costa to do whatever the heck they want. And that's the way it has to be, because Eden Hazard will not track runners.
No.
He just won't work back. He's magical in possession of the ball, creates wonderful opportunities, scores brilliant goals, but you ask him to run 10 yards back to track someone and he won't do it. It's just not in his makeup. So with that three-man central defensive unit and the workhorses, shall we say, of Marcus Alonso and Victor Moses, it gives freedom to Hazard and Pedro, and that's what's worked so well in the last 3 weeks for Chelsea Football Club. There will be changes here, but they've got good players to come in, Chelsea, and that's key, I think, because West Ham will make changes as well, you would think, and they've not invested wisely, I don't think, West Ham in the summer. They've bought some poor players, in my opinion, and players we've not seen much of in the likes of Sofiane Fagouli, Simone Zaza, who we've seen plenty of, Jonathan Kayeri, who doesn't look much cop either. So I think those Chelsea players that are going to come in, Michy Batshuayi, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, Nathaniel Chalobah, who we saw for a few fleeting moments at the weekend, they've got quality to come in, Chelsea. I think Chelsea will win. I know West Ham have picked up slightly, but a win at Crystal Palace, who were poor in that game, 1-0, and a last-minute Winston Reid winner in a 1-0 win at home against Sunderland, who've only picked up 2 points from 9 games. I think it's papering over the cracks, those two results for West Ham so far.
Yeah.
Chelsea much more solid. Chelsea go there and win, and 4-5. I expect changes to be made by both sides. I still like Chelsea to win this at 4-5.
All right. Do you think Victor Moses will start, or do you think he'll kind of keep him for the league, given how well he's playing at the moment?
I think might try and keep him fresh. Mm. You know, given that he's going to be, or it looks like he's going to be a Premier League regular from now on, I think he might try and keep him fresh. I know there's only a certain amount of changes you can make. If Willian's going to be available in the upcoming couple of weeks, maybe Victor Moses will play in this game. But he's playing in such a defensive role now, I wouldn't be mad keen on backing him to score at any time at 3-1.
Okay. Only purely for the Mugba angle.
Yeah.
He was on loan at West Ham, wasn't he, last season? So.
He's played for a few teams, hasn't he, Victor Moses? How many teams do you think he's played for in his career, Victor Moses?
Well, he's played for West Ham, Chelsea, Liverpool, wherever he was before Chelsea.
He's played for Crystal Palace, Wigan, yeah. Chelsea, Liverpool, Stoke City and West Ham in his career. So I suppose there's almost a mug bet every other week for for Victor Moses when he's playing Premier League competition.
Yeah, you know, they do those things at the moment. Since so-and-so happened, Jose Mourinho's managed Chelsea, left Chelsea.
Yeah.
Should do it with Victor Moses. Since he's played for Palace, left Palace, gone to Wigan, left Wigan. Yeah,
he's had 9 years at the in the Premier League now, and he's only 25 years old, so he's not done badly, has he, Victor Moses? Can't believe he's only 25 years old, Victor Moses.
Yeah.
So that is incredible. But yeah, he's been integral, I think, for what Chelsea have done in the last three matches. And Antonio Conte's, I mean, like I said on the punt a few, I predicted Chelsea at the beginning of the season would win the title. And I said on the punt like 3 weeks ago, can I go back on that? Can we record another one? But they're within 1 point of the top now.
Yeah, the heavily involved again, aren't they? I think Antonio Conte learned a lot in the Arsenal game.
Yes.
He learned a lot from his side, and then I think he drew a line under it and said, we can't play like that again. That's when he changed his system to what they're playing now.
I think it's helped that Nemanja Matic and N'Golo Kante have started to form a real partnership there.
Yeah, because Matic was superb 2 years ago.
Yeah.
A disaster of a season last year.
Yeah.
He looks to be getting back towards where he can be. So
I think definitely. I was impressed with them. I was impressed with Kante as well, who hasn't had a brilliant start to his Chelsea career, in my opinion. But I think now they've got that solid base. And I just think it was the fact that he didn't have three centre-backs and Aspilicueta coming into that position and playing as one of those three has helped Chelsea immeasurably, really. That's the one area where they can be exposed, though. And if he does play, Mikel Antonio, who is so good in the air, 13-5 he is to score any time. You saw at the weekend when Manchester United were threatening, it was because Zlatan Ibrahimovic was pulling onto the shoulder of Cesar Azpilicueta in dangerous positions when they got the ball out wide. He can, if they can get crosses in and Antonio can pull onto the shoulder of Azpilicueta, there's a chance that they could... That's where West Ham could have success, enjoy themselves. But I think Chelsea will win.
Mm. That's presuming Aspilicueta plays, of course. Check the teams because with Terry coming back, he could theoretically go with three centre halves, couldn't he?
Yeah, he could. I just he could easily.
Could go with Terry, Luiz, and Cahill, and have the wingers doing the running because they're not very mobile. Those three, I suppose.
No, he could. Yeah, precisely. He could have that and maybe play Aspilicueta in the Victor Moses role as well. Maybe, so you've got all these matches. This I know we're recording this on Monday. You must check the team news because it's so important in EFL Cup football, and price has changed a lot subsequently as well. So that last hour, in terms of volume of bets, that last hour is going to be hectic.
Yeah. Do you have a best bet to recommend?
I don't. There's nothing that absolutely stands out in the bets we've talked about. I do think Chuba Akpom will score because I'm worried about Reading down their right-hand side, Arsenal's left, and Akpom played on the left of a three in that 4-0 win against Nottingham Forest. Lucas Perez, by the way, not sure I mentioned it, but he scored twice in that match and he's likely to start up front. But yeah, I wasn't overly enamoured with the price there, but I think Chuba Akpom will score in that game on Tuesday.
I think Man City are a great price at
9-5. Yeah,
9-5, yeah. I think that's they should win that game, depending on team news, I suppose.
But yeah,
that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think Manchester City are the better of the two sides.
All right, well, good luck, Dave. Get your excuse ready. Team news is the excuse if it all goes horribly wrong, but good luck. Hopefully it won't. And enjoy it this week.
Thank you.
Get a £5 free bet every week with Offer Club from William Hill.
Hey, oh, let's go, let's go.
Simply stake a total of £20 or more across the week on pre-match football accumulators with four or more selections, and you'll get a £5 free bet on the Friday. Plus, you can get on faster and easier than ever with our new and improved mobile betting experience. Join William Hill Offer Club on mobile or online now. When the fun stops.